It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
To me, Ernest Hancock from Phoenix, Arizona, where we are a long ways off from the ocean. But that doesn't mean I won't make my own little trip out there if I think I can go be free. Well, we have a seasteading. The Seasteading Institute from Sunnyvale, California. Online with us is Max Marty. Now, he's a, he's got his MBA. I mean, from the University of Miami, saying, you know, this is something that's got you interested. And he's the head guy that's spearheading the Sink or Swim Business Plan Competition with a prize pool of $10,000. Now, this is, you just come up with some concepts, some ideas of what would you do with your freedom 25 miles off the coast where you're out of the jurisdiction of. And let's assume that, you know, you're not on the radar screen. They're going to leave you alone. You're just out there. You just want to be free. And you're out where hopefully you can be. What would you do? What would you do? Well, in the break, I went ahead and took the time. If you go to the top of Freedoms Phoenix, Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com, and you click on at the very tippy top up there, refresh the page, go ahead and get Declare Your Independence October 1st today, and you scroll down to this segment, and you'll see ground effect craft, the flare craft. I remember when this was being developed when I was younger in the 80s, and the whole concept is high-speed travel just a few feet above the ocean, and you can just whip on in faster than you can do rush hour traffic going into L.A. or Miami or, you know, Fort Lauderdale or whatever to go in and do your work when you're living out on the ocean. Now you have platforms. It'd be like big giant oil derricks. They got all kinds of different styles and structures that you can create just to be left alone. And it's backed by some people that want to be left alone themselves that have some cash. They made their money in PayPal, Facebook, whatever, and there's more and more of these people that to the point that they're building spacecraft. They're going, you know, we got Richard Branson. He's like, hey, you know, I'll just go to space. We're going to put a hotel in space. Heck, we're going to do tours around the moon. They're already planning on hotels in space right now. Well, how many gazillions of dollars does that cost? Well, for a fraction of that, maybe you can just go and live out on the ocean. Well, this very thing is a lot closer than many of us think. Max, you know, inspire us, man. Tell us some of the things that's been going on since you started working with the Seasteading Institute. How have you been excited as a young man?
Well, actually, so one of the most interesting things we've had going on is something called Ephemeral. And what that was it's sort of a festival in the water, where people could go and get the feeling as though they're on a seastead. You know, they can, a bunch of people who out there were basically a bunch of libertarians, and we're all out in the, in this case it was in the Delta in 2008 and Delta in 2009, and basically say, well, you know, what would we do given the freedom, given the ability to decide our own rules, regulations, and policies? And, well, we were out there for a few days having fun and giving that some thought, and one of the ideas that we've had is, well, what if we could continue to grow this idea, this festival, incrementally, you know, slowly move it out into the bay and then eventually move it out into the coast, and maybe we wouldn't even have to have this huge incremental leap of, well, you know, $100 million or whatever. Maybe we could do it step by step, and it's that incrementalism that seems to suggest that this could actually happen.
Well, it's called Burning Man without the desert. and that's the kind of, you know, something as simple as that is just going out in Death Valley. I mean, going out in the middle of freaking nothing in the summer heat, you would think that you would be able to get far enough from the man that you would just be left alone. Well, here comes the county sheriff, and here comes the man, here comes the permits, here comes all that. Well, you may not have that problem, at least not for a while, if you're going out into the ocean. But what has proved is that there are a lot of people that would love to go out and festival without being bothered, and it just would grow from there. If we had an expectation that we could find freedom on land somewhere, well, there probably wouldn't be a need for this, other than people just being creative and have some creative ideas that they need to be out in the ocean to exercise whatever, industry that they have, or idea, or sea farming or something like that. But because we can expect government to be intrusive and social and economically engineer us out of everything that we make, well, there's a drive for this, and there is a need and a desire. So I'm so glad that we have you guys here helping us do one thing that is very unique to human beings, and that is to imagine. And I want to thank you guys for that. But let's go ahead and talk about some of the ideas that has sprung up. Has there been any movement forward in actually constructing something, or they're just all in the planning stages now?
So right now we're mostly in the planning stages. We're doing the research. We're trying to figure out, you know, what exactly would the legal ramifications be? What would the political ramifications be? How could we get politicians, at least some of them, to be in favor of what we're doing, so that there's at least some strife within the government, and they're not all united against, this tiny little sea set out in the ocean. And when it's in formative stages, at which point it would be very weak and, well, heck, not easy to, not hard to go and take out. But, those sorts of research questions, the engineering research questions, and of course, the also important business, economic, and financial questions. Now, what is it that we could produce, like we were saying before with the business contest, what is it we could produce and then trade with people who are in the rest of the world that would actually make this a viable idea, that would make us create more wealth than we consume? And that's not an easy question, because being out in the ocean, you're going to tend to consume more than that same standard of living over on land.
Well, you know, I can think of it. I'll tell you what ran through our minds when we first started hearing about Sealand. And in fact, it was interesting, because we were in Anaheim, California for the 2000 Libertarian National Convention. As we're in our hotel room, it was something in the newspaper around there, Seasteading. It was on the internet. We're making a big deal out, and we're going, oh, we already know where this is going. Because the first thing that you provide as a service to a lot of people is just autonomy in the form of internet servers. If you were able to have a satellite communication, which is available, and you retained just paperwork, or just personal files, heck, pictures, you know, or pornography, or just their books, or anything that's outside of somebody gets a server warrant on you because you're not part of any jurisdiction, you know, that was, you know, one of the first things that they wanted to do is put servers on these platforms and so on. I'm going, okay, well, here comes the man definitely for that one. They don't want you to be secret, you know. So, I mean, right there you could see, especially when you're dealing with people that are internet savvy, what is one of the first things that they could offer as a service? We can give you privacy. What if we have people that just want to be left alone, want to live, want to raise families, schools, you know, do research? I mean, this is it's the limit. Go ahead and call it, 866-986-6397, 866-986-6397, and maybe you got an idea. We'll be right back with Max Marty and talk about it some more here on Declare Your Independence. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Independence. So let me tell you, one of the best ways you can declare your independence from someone is just be away. You know, get separated from, go. We have on the line Max Marty, Now, Max Marty is with the Seasteading Institute of Sunnyvale. It's seasteading.org. And we have a prize pool of $10,000 if you can come up with a good business plan for a commercially viable business that's sea-based. Now, this is, you know, how many entries have you had for this, Max? How long have you started the contest?
So we've had the contest for a few months now. And so far, confirmed entries, we have about 20.
Wow, very cool.
So and we haven't hit the first deadline yet. The first deadline is until this 22nd of October for the draft. So we're expecting hopefully a lot more to be coming in by then. But we've already gotten a number of pretty good-looking ones, so doing well on that.
Now, are some of these available yet, or we can go look at them, or you wait until you do the evaluation and then you'll put them up?
So as soon as the draft deadline hits, then they'll be posted up on our partner site, Human IPO, which is sort of a social media networking kind of site that helps people come up with and collaborate on business plans.
Seasteading.org, if you're interested out there. Have you been kind of pushing this at the universities or architectural schools or engineering, you know, kind of, you know, getting people sparked up about it? How you been promoting it?
Yep. We've been sending it out to a lot of professors at various business schools and teachers of economics and things like that who have been promoting it and talking about it. We had some piece in Reason. Brian Doherty of Reason posted about it. And we're doing our best to get the word out. And certainly being on your show is a good part of that.
Well, you know, the Lovelution out there is a lot of young people that are just, man, I want my freedom. They're willing to fight for it. In fact, if they have an opportunity, if they see that, you know, it's not going to be, you know, handy in their lifetime, or certainly they're willing to put a lot of effort towards something like, say, the Free State Project or freekeen.com, or they just want to go be left alone, be agorist, voluntarist somewhere. We just had the Liberty on Tour guys here this last weekend, and we're big sponsors of that. We want to make sure the next generation understands the power of a non-coercive government, a non-coercive existence. And if they have to go out in the ocean and get a good tan, you know, wearing bikinis and Speedos, well, heck, man, I don't think it's a big giant pull for them to want to do that. And if you have this, you know, people with the great minds and the resources behind you, then this might be a viable opportunity. Have you had anybody in business, you know, anyone that's interested in working with you in corporations, or someone that does manufacturing, or we make oil derricks and they're teaming up? I mean, have you got any kind of big corporation interest in this?
So we don't have any. We talked to a number of companies, for example, that do engineering research. We talked to a cement company. We talked to a number of them that would be involved. We talked to some people who are interested in sort of the medical tourism angle of it all, who may be locating aboard such a structure. But we're certainly still looking for more partnerships. So.
Well, this is, I mean, what was behind it? Why would they, someone, because you had some, you know, good libertarian minds behind this in economics, and of course you have some people with some money. I mean, what was their first reason for coming together? They said, you know, we want to, what, spark imagination, get the next generation thinking this way, want it for ourselves. We want to get the ideas and pull from the people to make our job easier to get my own residential floating, I get out of the way. I mean, how was this really the impetus for this?
So I think the emphasis from most people who are part of this movement now is to see a world where we actually have innovation in government, right? We haven't had real structural change in the way that government works. Well, some would say since the Constitution, of this country, right? For that, during that time, you know, a number of people got together and said, heck, we want to try out this new form of government that we think will work a lot better than what we got going on in Europe. And, let's put together this Constitution and let's see what happens. Well, we want to see that same sort of innovation on a grand scale. And I think everybody involved, or a lot of people involved with this movement, certainly want to do that too. They want to see a Silicon Valley of governments out there where not only can the average person get to choose, well, I want to go with this service provider versus that service provider at a low cost, but the average person who has their own idea can get together with some buddies, get some capital from a bank, and go and build one of these structures and test out that idea. And hopefully the ideas that will work will get copied and will expand in their scope and viability, and the ones that don't will, like any corporation, go bankrupt and stop existing and stop taking up somebody else's resources.
Well, what do you think is the, you know, it seems like such a simple and desirable concept. I'm wondering why it hasn't been done already.
Well, part of the reason, I think, is actually just that the ocean tax, right, the cost of doing business, the cost of living on the ocean has so far throughout history been pretty high. So if you go out onto a boat and you sail around, you're really taking up resources, and it's very difficult to live out there. And the cost of living on land has generally been fairly low. I mean, think of the early days of this country, for example. You know, if you there's not much of a government coming in and taxing you, especially if you just keep moving west and pushing out into the frontier. You can really try whatever you want out there. You can have your own life. You can have your own religion or your own political structure or whatever you want, essentially not being bothered by anybody over in Washington. But this has slowly been changed, and now it's to the point where, well, all the policies that matter, at least I think that matter, are usually generated over in Washington. And the stuff that happens at a state level is, well, not nearly as important. So you could, I suppose, move if you wanted to from, say, Arizona to New Hampshire to try to get away from certain laws that you don't like in Arizona and others that you might prefer in New Hampshire, but the ones that really matter are just too high up and too far away from you.
Well, there has been some other forays into this. We have, I think they called it the World. It was a ship that the World ship, they're just building. There's been designs even that would have airstrips on top, you know, and you have condos underneath and you have them. And I think they're even starting to build them. I'll start looking it up here in the break. But, you know, this concept is, you know, it's not unheard of. But I wanted to talk about what kind of, like, when we come back after the next segment, let's go ahead and we'll reset our mind in the what kind of government, if any, we would have. Would you have an ultimate owner? Would it be a homeowners association? Would you have some kind of a law enforcement? How would you enforce, you know, crimes against individuals? Would you, somebody murder somebody and it's the state versus so-and-so? Well, what if you had no state? I mean, these are questions that come up, and we'll talk about that when we come back. Are you prepared to talk about things like that?
Yeah, certainly.
No, I think that would be very interesting because, I mean, just off the top of your head before we hit break, I mean, you know, is there really a leaning in the people involved in this? They think they're going to have some kind of government or law enforcement or anything?
Well, it depends on what you call a government, of course. But I think the answer is yes, that they're going to have some sort of centralized structure on these platforms that makes rules and regulations about how people are going to live. Of course, the question is, what are those going to be, and how well are they going to work?
Oh, I don't know. And we have spent a lot of time on this. I remember in 93, 94, this was all the rage for a long time, us talking about, because technology had gotten to the point that this was possible, that there were enough people like us that would love to just, you know, bail on the whole thing, take our families and friends and start a new life somewhere fresh and on the ocean. Yeah, you can't get a whole lot fresher than that. Certainly the seafood would be a lot better. So we're going to be talking about that when we come back here on Declare Your Independence. My new friend Max Marty, a young man that's working with seasteading, and he's spearheading the Sink or Swim business plan competition with a prize of $10,000. And you got a few weeks to put that in. You got to come up with a 3D plan, though. You got to give me some CAD. You got to show me you got some skills. They've been marketing this around universities for quite a while, and they're getting ready to declare a winner and put it out for all of us to see the new ideas and the imagination of going somewhere where we can be free. We'll be right back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Don't stop me, 'cause I'm having a good time, having a good time.
Shooting star leaping through the sky like a tiger.
And as many other laws as I feel I should be able to get away with. Well, one of those things we got to understand, what kind of laws are we going to have out on the ocean? Well, maybe we have the law of gravity, but then what? I mean, what else do we got? And that's one thing. I'm sure that this has come up. We got Max Marty on from seasteading.org with that very concept that we are able here on planet Earth, well, maybe on the ocean, and we got air. We got, water. We got, probably be whatever climate that you wanted to have. And you got a lot, what was it, 3/4 of the surface of the planet is ocean. So I'm going, you know what? I think there's a lot of options out there available, and there could be entire continents. They're just floating out there. We look 100, 200, 300 years into the future. I'd be surprised if it didn't happen. But in the process, a lot of times at the very beginning, you want to be careful how you start because you just send it off on a track you didn't anticipate. So what is going to be the fundamental principles that we're going to be arguing, certainly from this libertarian standpoint of just going to be left alone? What are some of the conditions that someone would expect if they were to go out there and hang out with y'all? Max?
People who currently are, in the Seasteading Institute, at least some of us, the ones who are sort of directing things, would be probably something close to, something beyond a neoclassical view, right, and something getting close to an anarcho-capitalist view. That would be at least, if I were starting the Seastead and I were personally deciding on what the rules and regulations would be, would probably look something like that. Why? Because, I don't think it's actually been attempted very well, or at all, really, in the scope of government. It's been attempted in other spheres, and it's worked quite well. In fact, if you look at the Internet, you could say that the Internet is essentially a anarcho-capitalist state. It is a place where there are a few rules, there are a few bodies that try to regulate this or that issue that only come together when there's actually a problem, fix the problem, and then go about their business of whatever else they were doing, and don't stay around as politicians trying to figure out what they want to ban or not ban from what goes on the Internet. Now, of course, governments are trying to stick their noses into that anyway, but, that's neither here nor there. Now, of course, that would be my vision of a Seastead. You could also have something completely different. I mean, you can run the gamut, the whole scope from a nutty totalitarian funny farm like we have in North Korea, all the way out to beyond anarcho-capitalism to truly no rules whatsoever. And I think one of the wonderful things about this idea is that once we get the research off the ground, once we have the technology in place, we can say to people, look, here's all you have to do. Now go and convince a bunch of your buddies that think like you do. Perhaps let's say that they're a bunch of neoclassicals, or maybe they're greens or whatever it happens to be. Go out there, try your idea, and we won't say whether we won't say you can or can't. Go out there and try it, and if it works for people, great. Why? Because I think the world in which is the most free and the most desirable world is the one where if somebody wants to live under a communist regime, they can. And frankly, that they don't have to subject me to the same darn thing. So I would be happy living in my more libertarian-oriented state, or let's say a Seastead, and I would certainly be happy leaving other people who want to live in other sorts of governments alone.
Well, but there's going to be an inclination for the people that start this, that go through. I mean, the people that we're dealing with, I understand the concept. Somebody wants to be on their polygamist, Mormon, collectivist, me and my, 14 wives and 47 children, want to go out and be left alone. I'm hip, I don't care. But the first people that are going to blaze the trail on this, I would imagine that they would have, imagine this, you have the technology and you got, three billionaires and they got three seasteadings. They could dock up. They could link. And then somebody says, the two of us, we don't want you anymore. Peace be upon thee and unhook the mooring lines, man. Disconnect your plumbing and go over there a little ways. So I'm wondering how you would set up some kind of cooperative agreements. And if you had a contract, how would you settle that dispute? You go, hey, man, I put forth a little bit of extra construction and this, and I own and this. Is anybody going to contemplate how you're going to resolve conflicts and so on? I mean, I'm sure there's all kinds of arbitration and agreements and you go through in the beginning, but I'm just wondering how thoroughly this has been thought through.
So the there's actually it's great that you mentioned this, because one of the contests that we're going to have coming up after this business contest that we're actually working on getting off the ground now is a constitution contest. It's a contest for people to come up with what would be a good way to settle these sorts of disputes. What should these policies be? Now, what I would envision, and what I think a lot of people who are, like you said, the billionaires associated with the movement and that sort of thing, would probably be something like a third part. So, for example, for legal issues and court issues, you know, if somebody gets killed on the seastead, then what happens? Well, there are already a lot of arbitration companies, firms out there who will listen to your grievances and will be able to decide, and there's several ways that they try to do it in an unbiased way, on who is the party who is in the right, and then what remittances the other party must make to the first party on exactly what's going on. But those ideas are certainly something we can test out. The problem, of course, is when you're in a small community, let's say that the first seasteads are only, 500 people. Of course, we want them to get to 10,000 or 100,000, however big they can get. But the first ones might be rather small. So you need a way to outsource a lot of these sort of problems, because you can't have this huge court system, you can't have this governing body that would be taking up essentially too many resources on this small platform.
You know, the one thing that really had a big impact on me is reading a lot of Robert Heinlein. You know, he's a science fiction writer that I don't know how popular he is with the young now, but he certainly was when I was younger. And he had a lot of these kinds of things that were worked out in his novels, to where The Moon is a Harsh Mistress was a very good book. And I encourage the audience to read. I mean, if I had, you know, someone fresh to the ideas to open up their envelope of what is possible, you go and get The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, or James Hogan's Voyage to Yesteryear, or Voyage from Yesteryear, I think it was. And these are just, you know, spacefaring fairy tales of what would happen if. Well, one of them, The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, is when the moon became a penal colony, kind of like Australia. But when people go there and they serve their term, they're so accustomed to the low gravity there that they can't come back. So when they're freed, they create their own communities. And in that type of environment, you had all kinds of different ways that laws or norms or traditions or heritage of different families and so, how they were enforced. And it was just no central plan. There is no central plan for freedom. And that's kind of the point that I wanted to make with this. When you start getting into an opportunity to go be free, you have to be careful not to bring with you the same ideas and concepts and mechanisms that cause you to want to leave to begin with. So it's like when we have migration from Central America and South America, Mexico, coming into the United States. Well, libertarians, we embrace these people and say, let me tell you why you left. You don't want to do it again. You don't want to recreate what the reason you left these collectivist societies and be part of this thing here, even though you got the Democrats and oftentimes the Republicans too, trying to get them, pull them into their system and get their votes or whatever. So now we want to open up our mind, an entire generation thinking about ways that you can live in a society that is not based on coercion, not based on force, not based on who's got the biggest gun, not based, if you can create just the way human beings should live together, the way that they think, the way that they resolve disputes, the way that they avoid the disputes to begin with. You know, like, you know, the concept of good fences make good neighbors. Well, maybe it's all about having a good fence, being able to separate, being able to ally your little platform, your little seasteading section. You go, you know what? I break with thee, I break with thee, I break with thee, and you throw a dead fish at them, and you say, you know, we're done, and you go over and you connect on another one that's over on the horizon. You can see another platform over there. So I'm going, these are the things that, what is more important, it's not technology that's holding us back on this. That's not what the problem is. The problem is going to be the way we think about it. How will we structure or not structure living in a free environment? That's what makes me excited. That's what I want to be as an example to my children and my grandchildren. That's what, because we have been so conditioned over a period of time throughout with the media. And that's one thing that I talk about a lot on the show, Max, is that we have the optimism that I have is that it took tens of trillions of dollars over generations to brainwash us with government schools and with propaganda and with, you know, government-sponsored, licensed media, blah, 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 to turn us into something else that we didn't have to be. And here's a lifeline, an opportunity. Seasteading.org. There's a future here. We just need to embrace it. Open up the imagination. Start getting the neurons firing. You guys think about it. We'll be right back. Talk about some more with Max in just a little bit.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Of me, Ernest Hancock, about a little bit of truth and justice and what used to be the American way. Well, if we're going seasteading, are we going to call it American way anymore? Are we going to call it freedom way? Are we going to call it the libertarian way? What kind of way are we talking about, Max? We got Max Marty from seasteading.org. That's a good question, Max. I mean, we start to talk about going to sea. Where will we do it? I mean, would it be off the coast of the United States, China, Japan, Korea? I mean, what are we talking about here?
Well, definitely off the coast of some major city, some big economic hub, somewhere where we can trade with a lot so that we can produce something of value that the local economy, the people in the local state would actually want to buy from us, and so we can send it over there. Something like, let's say, well, you have to be at least 12 miles outside the coast to be outside territorial waters, which basically means anything that's illegal in the country or regulated in the country is also regulated there. An additional 12 miles is something called a contiguous zone, which is pretty much like a territorial water. So you have to be 24 miles out from any coastline of that country to officially be essentially outside their laws, except for when it comes to resources. So you're still within, they can still, so for example, they you can't get oil out of that area. You'd maybe not be able to get fish out of that area, but you can at least be there and generally be free of that state's regulation.
You know, one other thing that was of interest that I just thought of, as I remember the story back in the 1960 presidential election cycle between JFK and Nixon. JFK had a ship that was off the coast of California, I think off the coast of Los Angeles, and they're out in international waters, so they were broadcasting radio commercials and transmissions to the people of California outside in international waters, and there was nothing anybody can do about it until they pulled in the dock to get more fuel or something. They confiscated the ship. So I'm thinking, you know, we're talking about that would be an interesting thing to provide. I mean, especially with the internet and such. You would be able to broadcast, I guess, television, video, radio, or just do it on the internet. It's probably not going to make a difference if you do it on the internet. Is that one of the things that has come up, is that maybe you have your own satellite communication, we can put hub, server, video broadcasting kind of communication hub?
Right, yeah. So when it comes to broadcasting, this has, for example, already been tried and worked. So outside of the U.K., they had these things called pirate radio stations, which were basically radio stations being broadcast from various ships and I think from Sealand for a time, outside of the territorial waters, outside of the legal jurisdiction of England. And so the British, of course, the radio stations in that country weren't allowed to play certain kinds of music, so what people did was they floated out there and played those kinds of music. And, of course, the British government got very upset about this. They did everything they could to shut them down, for example, making it illegal to trade or barter at all with the ships or the companies that own the ships. And the only country in the region that would allow trade was Norway. So, actually, they had to do all their trading back and forth, all their monetary exchanges only with one country. But they were still viable just because that host country didn't allow something that people actually wanted to do. Now, of course, what is it that eventually shut down pirate radios in this situation? It was that Great Britain finally relaxed what it allowed on the air, and so radio stations were able to crop up that played, for example, rock and roll. And so, similarly, if CSTEDs have that effect on the on for example the United States government, if eventually there's just so much political pressure because let's say there's 100 or 1,000 of these things out in the water and everybody's preferring to live out there, that would be great. Then in that case we've won. We've been able to affect situations back on land, and that is ultimately one of our big goals.
Wow, well, you've come to the attention of a lot of people. I'm looking at your site here, and I see that Jim Von Ehr donates $100,000 to the Seasteading Institute, and he made his money in, you know, nanotechnology and so on, CEO and founder of Zyvec Labs. So here is, you know, a lot of these people. Tell me about some of the people that you think that we would be surprised are coming on board and starting to want to make nice with you guys.
Yep, it's... Well, it's, the fact is that they see a world without government innovation. They see a world without political innovation. And it's no surprise that people who are involved very highly in places where there is innovation, namely where there's a market, namely the technology sector, want to say, well, gosh, why have it worked over here? Can't we make it work for government? Let's go over there and see what we can do.
You know, that's one thing that, you know, some of the things that you would think would come out of this, just being left alone, would be, give me just off the top of your head, some of the things that you think might be spawned from this. I mean, more than writers and artists and even filmmaking or the arts and entertainment, let's go get down into some of the technologies that would have an advantage out there. Because in the ocean, I mean, you're not going to be as rock solid still for developing of crystals or something like that. But I'm, you know, what are some of the things that are unique out there? You know, I'll give you a good example. If you have the ocean and you have a big giant area, you just put, you know, wind farms for power generation or just big giant floating mile long solar collectors, and you have the energy. Heck, you could be, you know, filtering seawater and pull out the freaking gold that's in it. I mean, you know, there's everything is dissolved in seawater. It's just in such minute quantities that you'd have to go through a gazillion gallons to get anything of value. But if you have that enormous expanse of to the horizon of a solar panel, all of a sudden it becomes viable. I mean, what about power generation?
Right. So one of the schemes for power generation has been using the waves to generate power on the ocean. Of course, one of the problems with this is that when you try to do it, you need to do it on such a large scale that it's not really feasible to do it if you're say on a smaller platform. But if you can make these things big enough, then economies of scale kick in, and you can start generating power from ocean waves. That could potentially be enough not only to power the seabed, but potentially to power more than that. And
you know, that's
of
one
course,
thing.
A bunch of other.
Oh, well, you know, I wanted to bring up that. I remember we just had a story on that. Oh, probably a couple of months ago on Freedom's Phoenix, where it was in the shape of, like, imagine a 55-gallon drum, the size, and then do like a football field length of these connected in the wave, and it just kind of oscillates up and down like a snake going up and down, and it generates electricity. And you don't have to do anything. It's just sitting there generating electricity from the movement from the waves. So, and if you could do something as simple as have a cable that goes down to a generator, and as it goes up and down, it ratchets and turns a turbine. I mean, it's just, there's all kinds of simple things in addition to just, you know, solar or wind. In fact, we just have in Europe off the coast of England, I think they put a big giant wind farm up. So I can see the potential. And I'm wondering, in the last couple of minutes, tell me where you think the hurdles are. Is it the imagination of the people? Is it a capital investment? Is it fear of government intervention? I mean, are there any hurdles? Is it full steam forward? Or is there something that you think in the mind of some of the people they have to overcome? What's the biggest hurdle?
Well, so I would say a lot of the hurdles, because there really are a lot of them, are engineering hurdles, are legal hurdles. But honestly, those are solvable with enough money. If you, for example, you know, imagine somebody, you know, a few hundred years ago looking out and saying, well, you know, out in the ocean will sit this enormous platform that reaches all the way to the ground and drills oil out of there. And, they would have said, well, that seems really crazy. That seems impossible. You're just, you know, you're nuts. But, you know, well, turns out that the stuff that was under the ocean floor was really valuable, and people figured out how to go down there and get it. So similarly, the technologies that we're going to need, whether it's breakwaters for slowing down the waves as they approach, or, new ways to transmit bandwidth over satellites more cheaply or whatever that happens to be, those are achievable. So the problem now is what, and actually governments won't be much of a problem either, because especially early on, we're just not going to be big enough to really catch anyone's attention and have anybody go point guns at us.
You know,
so really
one thing...
the problem right now is financial, I think. So how do we get the money necessary to go out there and give this a shot, go out there, develop the technologies we need, and go out there and try it out?
Steve Wynn, casinos, Las Vegas. Say, hey, man, come out here, all that stuff you got to worry about and taxes and this and construction, don't have to worry about it anymore. Come out here, have biggest casino 25 miles off the coast of California, make bank, big giant. Ooh, and by the way, you can have a brothel and marijuana is legal. I mean, you know, I can just see the potential. You know what happens in Las Vegas stays in Las Vegas. Heck, man, you beat that by a factor of 10 going out in the ocean. I mean, have you had anybody from the entertainment industry, like in casinos, approaching you with this?
We have had people from the entertainment industry approach us. I can't divulge anybody's names, but let's just say that there's certainly waves being made in that industry.
I would not be surprised at all, especially after I saw Wynn on television just go off on government on what a all the problems that they have in development and the investment they make and all this stuff. If they can get outside of the country in an area where they can just be free to innovate, free to offer things to people that they want, and a lot of it's just entertain, just be left alone, that's the beginning. I think that you guys are going to have a lot more interest as time goes on, and I'm going to do the best I can to make sure whenever you got news, you let me know, and we'll share it with the audience. Would you please?
Modern.
Thanks a lot. Max Marty from seasteading.org. Go check it out. There's a $10,000 prize if you got a good business plan. Oh, this is just starting. We'll talk to you next week here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. Go be free!